I love scotch. 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 Scotch.
Yep. Have another whiskey.
If you'd like to speak to me in person, press 1. If you'd like to order drugs, press hash.
I had a gentleman in the crowd that was like, tell me how to drink Glenfiddich. And I was like, I will not do that.
Yep.
You drink Glenfiddich how you want to drink Glenfiddich.
Wear a cowboy hat in Los Angeles and look at the amount of looks you get.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. This is the most flamboyant city on earth. You wear a cowboy hat, people look at you like you are like an alien.
The Beatles came on and my mate picked me up on his shoulder. George Harrison is as close to me as that wall now. I went, all right, George, all right. And he went, cock. And that was the closest I ever came to the Beatles.
Have a whiskey while we...
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Cheers. Long.
Cheers. Welcome back to United States of Dramerica, and I'm delighted to have on here a man who I see over Zoom twice a week, every week. I have to call him Master Crosby because he's one of my karate instructors, but you'll need to know his first name. So welcome to the podcast, Master Luke Crosby.
Good to be here. Dan, huge fan of the podcast. I mean, anytime I'm a big podcast listener, but as soon as I found out about yours, not only because you're my student, I just love the content. You're a fantastic interviewer, and I'm so happy I'm finally here.
Fantastic. So look, I want to cover some martial arts stuff. I want to talk about your acting, your stunt work, some of your fight choreography. But for those of you who are listening, who are thinking, Crosby, that sounds like a name that I've heard before.
It's very Christmassy, doesn't it?
You are legit a member of the Crosby family. So
I am.
Bing is, sorry, was great-grandfather?
Correct. So my father, Gregory Crosby, is the firstborn grandson. So Bing had four boys, his second oldest, I believe. I always mess this up, but Dennis Crosby is my dad's dad, and that makes me the great-grandfather or great-grandson of Bing.
So obviously people use the expression Hollywood royalty a little bit too much, but
indeed
you're not the only member of your family in Bing's line of descendants who work in the business.
I'm pretty sure. Oh my lord. I mean, and like, here's the thing. I hate to say it. Like, the Crosbys are kind of like rabbits. We're all over the place in different fields. You know, most of us are in acting or filmmaking. And then obviously the rest of them are in music, right? Like, I believe my Uncle Phil, who I haven't seen in a long time, he's a brilliant crooner. And I believe he's working in Hawaii. I want to say, I could be completely wrong here, but I think last time I saw on his Facebook, he's doing music in Hawaii and he's making albums and doing live performance. Well, maybe during the pandemic, not so much, but fantastic human being doing music.
One of the things we when we have our karate lessons, you every so often lapse into a terrible British accent that you try and do when I've just finished talking. But it's because you spent quite a bit of time in the UK.
Yes.
Doing the sort of convention scene, because your mother was quite a renowned stunt woman and actress. So tell me, just let's do before we do like the Bing stuff, let's talk about your mum, because I imagine some of this will lead into how you ended up doing what you're doing.
Yes. So my mom is a trip, right? So Spice Williams Crosby, right? Legal name, right? My mother is a jack of all trades. I would say master of one, but I mean, she's more than that. My mother was a singer-songwriter, guitar player, pianist. She's a doctor. She has two master's degree and a PhD. She's actress, stunt woman. I mean, it's so much. It's so much, Dan. And so my mother is primarily famous for doing a lot of horror and sci-fi in the golden age of horror and sci-fi in the 80s and 90s. And my mother doing Star Trek V led to going to the UK and going to Europe a lot growing up. So like I said, I think I've told you, I've been to the UK 3 or 4 times now. And every time we've been there, I mean, and it's a long period of time as well, because we're not only just doing conventions, but then we're also seeing friends. We have many friends out there that are not only just convention runners, but, you know, just friends from the filmmaking world. And I mean, it was so funny growing up with my mother. And if my mom was doing a convention, she would always try to grab an extra ticket so I could come out with her. And it was almost like, I think now looking back at it, you know, she always used to say, well, you know what, it's time away from school, but you're going to get more of an education over here than in school. But I think the truth of it was I was also working at these things because I was also helping with money, or I'd be helping her with managing her stuff. But, you know, I got three or four free trips to London, you know, because of it. And
were you destined to end up doing some form of film acting stunt work because of your child? Like when you were a kid, were you, how young were you when you started your martial arts? And was it because, you know, your mum did this stuff and you just knew this was something you wanted to do?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's in a nutshell. So my mother started martial arts under Judo Jean LaBelle, who's a very famous wrestler, martial artist, stuntman, coordinator. And for all your listeners, I'm if you guys ever see crazy red-haired, pink gi wearing judo master, that is Judo Jean LaBelle. And judo, some of his most notable students are Ronda Rousey, Gokor, who runs Go-Karts, I think it's called. Or no, it's called Gokors. And Judo Jean mentored my mom in stunts initially, and also in wrestling, in judo. And not too long after that, my mom was introduced to the Jet Center in the 80s. And my mom didn't train there very long, but out of the Jet Center came Mark Parra's House of Champions. So there was this long line of martial arts stunt people that knew how to play fight, but they didn't know how to actually fight. So that was a big thing throughout the 80s and 90s, where a lot of these stunt men and women were like, well, hold on, I want to actually know combat. Not only is it good for self-defense, but it also helps me understand, right? Because until then we were John Wayne punching everything. And there was this big turn of events. So my mother started her journey with Mark Parra at House of Champions in 1995. And when I was born in 1995, you know, right as soon as I could start comprehending and knowing things and understanding and taking commands, I was in class. So my first class was in 1998, and I didn't listen to a damn thing. I ran around the mat thinking I was a dinosaur, and it was a lot of up and downs, right? Because it was, you know, both my parents. So my father was a football guy, and he was a track and field guy, and he was very athletic. My dad, being part of that Crosby family, funny enough, my dad was dating James Coburn's daughter, and my dad was friends with Bruce Lee. So my dad got to train with Bruce Lee and Wing Chun and Jeet Kune Do in the 70s. And he's like, oh yeah, no, it's fun. You know, and my dad didn't know anything back then. My dad's like 18, 19. He's like, oh yeah, we had a good time. And I'm like, you literally trained with the masters of masters. And he's like, yeah, you know, train with Bruce Lee. And then I would go and have dinner with Frank Sinatra. You know? I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, so my dad was that guy. Wow. But my dad still kept a lot of that athleticism and went into boxing and weightlifting and powerlifting and stuff like that. And obviously my mother was more of the brawler, so the martial arts stuck with her, but very athletic family. So no matter where I was in my periods of life, whether it's young life, young adult life, teenage life, I was either in the dojo or the gym. Wow. So for me, it was one of those things where it was a chore until I got my black belt. Once I got my black belt, everything clicked for me. And it took me 12 years to get to black belt. So,
I'm no expert. I am a mere orange belt, but black belt, I've been told you can get there in sort of 3 or 4 years, so at least for the first one. So why did it take 12 years?
Well, so here's the thing. For one, the systems were much different in the 90s and early 2000s, right? So the art that I originally black belted in was called Arju Kempo Karate. And Arju Kempo Karate was really one of the first big MMA schools, because we weren't just Japanese Kempo, right? Like, or Ryo Dojo Kempo. We were, I mean, when I was growing up, Dan, I had almost 40 black belts on the mat, and they all taught something different. They were all under the Arju Kempo banner, but we had Free Taylor as a jiu-jitsu instructor, who was a student, I believe, under the Gracie Baja area. Or no, I think he actually might have been a student under Jean-Jacques Machado, not thinking about it. I know he was under one of them. I mean, can't miss those families. But we had them. We had, you know, Sugarfoot Pete Cunningham as a kickboxing instructor. Sean Yacoubian, you know. Sean Yacoubian now teaches Joe Rogan Muay Thai, you know, or he was holding for him when he was here in California. I grew up with some of these legends that all taught specific arts. And part of ranking up in Arju Kempo Karate was having some proficiency in each one of these arts. So Arju Kempo was five main arts. It was Kempo Karate, a little bit of Kyokushin, Shotokan, Muay Thai kickboxing, Judo, actually, no, it's more than that, actually. Judo, and then Eskrima stick fighting. So it was like six or seven arts. And you had to be proficient in every single one of them before you could test. So for one, as a kid, you know, you're not really thinking much about all of this. You know, as a young, when I was 10 or 12, I would be in class and it was just overwhelming. I would be, first 45 minutes was, you know, holding your front stance position, you know, like doing basic forms. And then the last hour I was doing kickboxing sparring. And then I was, you know, throwing on another uniform to hop into jiu-jitsu. So until each one of those senseis thought I was ready, you know, I wouldn't go up anywhere. So it was just a much different time. And also the ranking system was much different, you know?
I mean, one of the things I enjoy about learning from you, obviously you're a very good teacher.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You're a great student. You're one of my favorites.
But like in between class, you know, in between teaching and stuff, you occasionally just end up doing various flips and so on around the mat, which is always incredibly impressive. But, you know, you, one thing, you really know your martial arts history and so on, which you don't need to know in order to be a black belt. And I'm sure there's plenty of people who don't. But for you, being a student of martial arts is an important part of that. Is that just because you had access to these incredible people growing up that you sort of ended up being interested in it because you just, you got to sort of browse a, you know, a library of people who were just extraordinary in their fields?
It's a really fun question to answer, actually. So like I said, martial arts as a kid was a chore. And then I got to black belt and then everything clicked. Everything clicked because, so my head sensei, Shion Mark Para, shout out to everyone at House of Champions, my original dojo. He brought up a quote. So my, the nice thing about my old dojo, which I really loved, was every single one of these guys did travel. They did leave the country. They learned the art. You know, Shion Mark Para, my first instructor, was not only taught by Benny the Jet Yukitas and that whole Yukitas family, but then he was taught by Bill Ryasaki. And, you know, he was learning stuff over in the Philippines by great grandmaster or supreme grandmaster, Kakoy Kanyete, God rest his soul. And same with Bill, God rest his soul as well. So these guys were taught by absolute legends, not so much in the United States, but from other countries or people that were coming from first or second generation martial arts. So, you know, I mean, Cecil Peoples, who was a ref for the UFC, was one of my instructors. You know, I had all these people in my life that, you know, like what we do at Cutting Edge, where we circle up and we huddle up and we talk about, you know, we have the huddle discussions. We had something very similar to that, but it was more about life. And it was more about, you know, it wasn't so much life lessons, but it would be the history. You know, Shion Mark used to circle us up and tell us stories about, you know, fighting in the Philippines and like the whole lineage of the Filipino, you know, Spanish War and how they learned how to pick up stick and knives to fight, you know, Magellan. And it was very graphic, you know, probably maybe not so much for, you know, the whippersnappers today, but I think it's important to know the history of the warriors that created the art that you're now learning, because it is your lineage. You know, it's not a biological lineage, but it is a history. You know, like when you do Wing Chun, you are in the legacy of Ip Man and Bruce Lee, right? You are part of that. You are taking the same moves and the same stretches and the same beatings that they all did. And I think when you have heroes to look up to, you know, the Chinese call it wuxia, right? Like the hero's a legend. When you see those stories, it motivates you. And I think that's what happened to me. I think I would hear these stories and I wouldn't comprehend. And then I got up to black belt and I became completely fascinated by Japanese culture, because that was the main focus of my art, was a Japanese style. We said sensei, we said shihan, kyoji, you know, things like this. And I remember one of my senseis, shout out to Shion Jacob Bressler. Sensei Jacob would pull out books, you know, like I think I brought it up before, the Book of Five Dreams, Miyamoto Musashi, and he would read passages out of it. And, you know, when I got to, up to black belt, I'm like, everything that's in this book now makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Right. And that is that light bulb that goes off. And after I got the black belt, one of the things that all these senseis once said was, well, now you have to find the way. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? They're like, well, look, the way without the way is the way, which is Bruce Lee saying. So to me, what that meant was go study other arts. And after I tested for my first degree, I started learning Chinese wushu. I went into, you know, gung fu, you know, monkey style gung fu with Sifu Michael Matsuda. Shout out to him with he owns the and runs the Martial Arts History Museum in Burbank. So once everything opens up, I can't shout them out enough. They're a fantastic organization, nonprofit. And they really teach the history. I was starting to learn all these other arts and seeing the beauty in the history and just the warriors that came out of these times. That's what really pushed me into wanting to keep training, because it wasn't just punches and kicks. Now I was seeing like, oh, these martial lessons created men that made something different out of history because of the mentality they had. So that's what really was like, okay, this is what's going to settle me into whatever I end up doing.
So we should have a whiskey before we get going. We might even forget. So interestingly, you're drinking Irish whiskey at your end.
Well, you know, because my great grandfather Bing would come from his grave and say, why aren't you drinking Irish whiskey? I do a really crappy Irish accent too. My grandfather
would keep my Irish accent might be worse than your British accent. So what which one have you got?
So, you know, it's funny. What is this? This is the Quiet Man, which is the traditional Irish whiskey. And it's funny, if I recall right. So one of my ex-girlfriends, who I was almost with for 5 years, her father was an alcohol distributor for Southern Wine and Spirits. So he used to get all these crazy whiskeys. And I could have sworn he got this one years ago. And I remember really liking it. So I picked it up. And I, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna have a good drink with my friend Dan.
Right. Very good. Right. So I've got traditional Japanese. So I've got the Nikka coffee single malt.
Sugoi.
I thought I'd do a Japanese whiskey with you. Cheers. When you were given your family lineage and the fact that you were obviously good at martial arts, were you sort of, assuming you were going to do a version of something in entertainment, were your choices sort of acting, stunts, fight coordinating, or even actually fighting? Or was that never, was the fighting part never an option? Like competitive fighting?
Oh, man. Well, okay. So, all right. So here was the deal. You're going to laugh, and not too many people know this about me. I was actually very set on archaeology and paleontology throughout my child years and early teen years. I was completely obsessed with digging things out of the ground, wanting to learn about that. Once again, historical things like anthropology stuff, really learning like ancestry and history and things like this. And I had no interest in the film world at all, although I was obsessed with films. I did, like, my father and mother almost every night always used to have me watch a movie. That was like the one tradition in the house, was we were grew up watching films. And it, we watched everything from my grandfather's films and then my personal favorite, the 70s and 80s films, you know, things that were, we were just cinephiles. We always watched films.
Sorry to interrupt. So obviously I think Bing did 70 movies. So
just about, yes. Yes. And then there's some, I would have to ask my dad this, but there were some projects he had in development that he was going to star in, and he couldn't do it just because he passed away. So there was projects that came out that were supposed to be Bing's that they just had to replace him with. So even producing credits, they're like predate his, or, you know, after his death. It is pretty crazy.
Because obviously when, you know, lots of people do movie night with their kids, but presumably movie night when you've got your great-grandfather's been in about 70, your mother either acting or doing stunts for, you know, Mission Impossible movies and Spider-Man and... Yep.
Guyver, you know, Dodgeball, you know. Yeah,
there are some... Did you just watch movies which had members of the Crosby lineage in them, or did you sometimes do non-Crosby movies?
A lot of the time, so great-grandpa's movies are always every Christmas, right? You know, Holiday Inn, White Christmas, Going My Way is what we watched last year, and it's one of my father's favorite movies. Fun fact, that's the one that great-grandpa Bing won the Oscar for. And my dad... So my dad grew up throughout the 70s and 80s, and he has like his particular picks, right? So like my dad was a huge fan of like the 80s Italian horror films. So like Dario Argento's Suspiria, Lucio Fulci's Zombie, and like Profondo Rosso, and like things like this were my dad's forte. Because my dad also lived in Europe for a long time. My dad was in the UK for almost 5-6 years. So my dad saw some of the best, you know, some of the best European, Italian films. And he kind of passed that on to me, and it stuck. And I just, you know, I remember every Friday night was like Friday horror night. So we would always watch a horror film. And, you know, so it was themed, right? So I almost tell people, I'm like, the good first quarter of my life was film school. Because my dad would explain, like, okay, so look at the lighting that Argento would use here. He's using these red party gels, like, you know, he's not much of like a on-set filmmaker, but you know, it was something that would pump the brain with ideas. And then, you know, Thursday was like epic movie night, where, you know, we would watch David Lean stuff. You know, we were watching Lawrence of Arabia, or, you know, my dad made me watch Dr. Zhivago like 3 or 4 times, and I'm like, Dad, and he's like, no, it's brilliant. You need to watch this, you know. So I grew up mainly seeing stuff like that. But then when it came to my mother's films, obviously we would watch it because we want to support mom. But what was really funny, as a teenager, I would personally find films and put them on. And my mom would walk by and go, oh, is this Spawn? And I'm like, oh, yeah. She's like, oh, I'm in that. And she'd sit down next to me and be like, there I am right there. You know, so it would be funny things like that, you know, or, you know, one of my favorite, it's such a bad movie. I mean, it's good, but it's so bad. I love High School High, which is like a really raunchy 90s comedy with Tia Carrere and John Lovitz. And John Lovitz plays a high school teacher. It was very much like, it was like Naked Gun, but thrown into a high school setting. You know, John Lovitz goes into a urban city to teach at a really, really low end high school. And he gets all the kids to come around. And I'm watching this in the living room as a teenager. I'm laughing my ass off, thinking it's hilarious. Mom walks by and goes, oh, hey, High School High. I'm like, yeah, this is amazing. She's like, hey, I'm in that. Sits down. She's like, there I am. And I'm like, there you are.
Did you go on set at all? When you grow up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I mean, well, one of my favorite stories. So when I was 18 months old, my mom worked on From Dusk Till Dawn. So I got to spend, you know, God knows how much time. I mean, Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, George Clooney, the whole gang, Danny Trejo, they all held me as a baby. So I have photos of all this. And I honestly, I think subconsciously and Freudian, like, I think that is why I was so attracted to filmmaking at the end of the day. It was just, you know, I was surrounded by it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're now, when you're sort of, because obviously you work, you do bits and pieces around acting and stunt work and fight coordinator work, which is your passion? If you could choose one of those three to make a career in, which one would it be? Or did you want to do a bit of all of them?
So after I got black belt, I really wanted to take a crack at acting. And it was because I once again, my dad threw all these 80s classics at me. So I loved Van Damme. I loved, you know, the Steven Seagal set. Okay, he's such a douche. But, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, I grew up watching this and I was like, so you can be a martial artist and an actor? Like, that's plausible? So I wanted to have a go at acting. And I actually really do love the craft of acting. But I realized for me personally, the lifestyle around acting wasn't for me because I was contradicting a lot of what the lifestyle of martial arts is. Martial arts is being humble and accepting the truth as it is, whereas acting is trying to find the truth within a lie, right? Because you're pretending to be something. And I had brilliant acting teachers. I had Alfredo Russo, Al Russo, who was in the Godfather series. I had, you know, Joey Paul Jensen, who worked with a lot of the Disney stars. And I learned quite a bit and I'm very grateful for it. But at the end of the day, I was starting to get more stunt acting parts and I found myself more excited for getting the action roles than the more deep dramatic roles. And I mean, I didn't mind it. I loved it, but I found myself like, getting out of bed to memorize three paragraphs of lines and going, you know, having these, you know, pompous artistic directors go like, you know, what is the passion? What are you, you know, I wasn't feeling that, you know, I wasn't about that because I was constantly pretending and I didn't like that. So I had a blast, you know, I mean, I did two films back to back. I did James Patterson's Maximum Ride for Netflix. And that was fun. I had a blast. I learned a lot, you know, even though I was doing action stuff in that. And then I immediately did Astro with my good friend, Asif Akbar. And I had a blast, but the thing I noticed about both of them was they were both action roles. And I was like, I think I should just be a stuntman. I think, you know, I think there's, it requires acting. And I remember talking to my mom about it and my mom, I remember she tried to talk me out of it because she's like, honey, you realize what this means. I'm like, yeah. She's like, look, you're going to be jumping off buildings, lighting yourself on fire. I'm like, I know, but I'm doing that already, even when the camera's not rolling. So, you know, it's what, you know, it's one of those things. And so I made a promise to my mom and my family that the two things I would never do were high falls because we've lost too many good stunt men and women because of that. And I would never do, certain precision car stuff. Cause once again, it was just, you know, major things, but a majority of the main money is really in the fight work. And I'm going to Columbia College of Hollywood right now. Cause I wanted to get my degree in direction. Cause ultimately what I wanted to do was I really wanted to be a director and I love directing. I have a blast directing, but once again, it's the action stuff again, right? Like I love the action work. So really what this all has come down to is I've worn many hats, but what I've condensed it down to is I love fight choreography because it is direction. I am working with the camera, but I'm also putting realism of fighting into this world, right? Because I was just saying this in one of my my essays for my university. Stunts is the only real thing in a fictional world. Right. You don't fake car hits. You are getting hit. You know what I mean? Like there isn't, you know, a pretend dummy. Like, I mean, well, sometimes, but for the most part, when we see people lit on fire in stunts, they are really lit on fire. So for me, this was the perfect balance. I could direct, I could set cameras like a second unit director, but I can also design fights and really create this realism and have this freedom of, you know, expression, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
Stunts is a science. It's just, they see us as rough and tough people. They don't necessarily see us as artists. And that's the unfortunate problem is, I think it's right. It's like what I talk about with martial arts, right? It's not just crazy MMA, like Mohawk, you know, drinking beer craziness, right? There is a real philosophy and mentality to stunts. There is a real science to it. I just don't think that is appreciated enough. So what I would say to most people to answer your question is it isn't respected enough. But I think the way that you respect anything is by understanding it and learning it. You know, so anytime a filmmaker is going, like anyone that's going to a film school or anyone that is learning even acting, I always tell them to take a stunt course if they can find one. Because once you see what the work is and you understand it, then it peaks and you go, right, okay, I understand now.
Mm. So is it, Hollywood's a funny place. I remember once getting an Uber in the days before the pandemic when I got Ubers. And I remember having a journey with a guy who was an actor, as so many Uber drivers in LA are.
Yes, yes. The Uber driving is the new waiting of tables.
Yeah, no, 100%. And much more efficient.
Yes.
You can drop in and out of it. But I talked to this guy and he was telling me how he was going to have to leave LA and move to Albuquerque because there was no work. And then at the end of it, as I often do when I've been talking about the business with somebody, I asked them their name just so I can look them up on IMDb afterwards. And he said to me, oh, yeah, my name's Ryan Slater, like Christian Slater, because he's my brother. And right. I remember thinking, you know, obviously there's nepotism in every industry, but if your brother's Christian Slater and your mum is one of the most renowned casting agents, you know, why are you struggling to get work? So for you, with, you know, your mum with her storied career, you know, your father who did Hacksaw Ridge, and then obviously the Bing part, plus every other member of your family.
Right, right.
Is that an advantage or a disadvantage?
See, okay, so it's weird. Once again, the martial arts thing was a real humbling thing, right? So I was the guy that was like, no, I'm not going to tell anyone about my lineage. I'm just going to make it. I'm going to be humble and stay humble. And then you get into your mid-20s and you're like, oh, shit, I should have probably said some stuff because I could have been working quicker, you know? I'm like, oh, fuck, you know, right? So, but... So here's the thing. Having my mom and dad around helped a lot. I mean, having them helped a lot for multitudes of reasons. One, anytime I had an audition tape, they would be the first ones to help me out, right? If I needed something, they would push me in the right direction. But ultimately, it's so funny. I've met more people in my industry through martial arts, just the martial arts community, and through the stunt community that I've learned, or not stunt community, but like doing parkour, you know, workshops and such. I've met more people that have got me work through that than I would say even, you know, my folks. I mean, my folks were huge help, no doubt. But it's the community. There's a great community. I don't know if I can bring up this particular group, but let's just say there's a group where people are casting things. They're like stunt casting directors. And they just post like, hey, I need someone that's this height, this hair, who's got it? And people just submit themselves like that. And then that's how people are getting hired. And so I think the stunt community is really good about that. And I think with actors in particular, once again, it's like you have to be so dedicated as an actor. You know what I mean? You know, I think in anything in the filmmaking world, I think the only thing in the filmmaking world that you'll forever need is PAs, production assisting, which I've totally done. And with actors, you got to understand there's like 5 million of you, right? And it's not so much about how good you are. I mean, I know students that went to USC or Juilliard for acting and they work at McDonald's. You know, it's more about who you know, who you hang out with. Obviously keep those skills, but I think the problem with a lot of actors is they think it's a very technical game, and it's not a technical game, right? It's not about like, well, I've done this Shakespearean play, I've done this. It's like, well, who have you been hanging out with though? Are you going to this club? Are you going to this? You know, I mean, I've met some of my people that are producing films now, I've met them at my local gym. And I'm working out and I go, oh, hey, man, you know, how's it going? And my good friend Asif, who did Astro and has just finished a film with Mickey Rourke and just finished, you know, a bunch of films that he's directing. And, you know, I have a project coming up with him in April. I met him at my gym with my dad. And I saw that he was wearing like, I think he was wearing like a Bloodsport t-shirt. I love Van Damme and Bloodsport. I was like, dude, I love that movie. And, you know, it turned out he was going to my now university, Columbia College Hollywood. And we've been friends ever since. You know, it's just, you know, like that's how you make those relationships. He's been a friend of the family for years now. You know?
The martial arts community is an interesting one. I think like the whole world of black belts, obviously there's lots of actors, as you say, but there's something about martial arts and this concept of a black belt.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of, in some ways it's easy, as in, like, if you start when you're a kid and you go every week, you could, unless obviously you have your slightly complicated one where you almost have too many amazing sensei, but, you know, you can get your black belt in, you know, 2 or 3 years, potentially, maybe slightly longer. But there's a sort of mentality around black belts. And when obviously I'm not one, although I hope to be at some, if it takes me 12 yes. years, I'm not going to make it. Because I'll be in my mid 50s by then. But I remember like there's a magician I know who's a black belt in karate. And, you know, there's a guy I played football with who's a black belt. And there's something about sort of the type of person who gets a black belt that does set them apart. Is there a sort of secret world of black belts out there that, you know,
it is this weird, you know, I shout out to Bob Wall with worldblackbelt.com. Bob Wall, who was in Enter the Dragon, O'Hara, good family friend, good friend. He gave me my second dan at House of Champions. It was great trade-off. One of my first stunt gigs was I played a ninja for one of his commercials for his website. And I said, you know, I was like, you know, Bob, I have one request. And he's like, yeah, what is it, mate? And Bob is very much old school. If you do something for him, he'll do something for you. Simple as that. And I love that golden age of martial arts, right? Chuck Norris, Bruce Lee, Bob Wall, Leo Fong, Fumio Demura, you know, Dan Inosanto, all these guys that were traditional karate. Because it was like, that was when it was much different. There were no pads. There were no belts. You get a white belt. You're probably that white belt for 5 or 6 years. And then all of a sudden, okay, there you go. You understand the techniques. You know what I mean? It was a much different time. You know, like... there's a great documentary I love called The New Gladiators, and it was about this giant martial arts tournament in Italy, and you're just watching these kumite fights where there were no pads. These guys beat the shit out of each other and shook hands. They're missing teeth, and I think that is a much different time than it is now. But I mean, kind of going into what I was saying, going back to the Bob thing. Bob's trade off. I did the commercial for free. For SAG, so I got a SAG voucher, which was great. And then he showed up to my second degree black belt test at House of Champions and gave me my black belt as part of the ceremony. So I had a celebrity give me, a person that was in Enter the Dragon gave me my black belt. So I thought that was really cool. And I have photos of that. I can send that to you, brother. But I think what it is, and I've said this, I think every sport has great camaraderie because you're sweating together, you're feeling losses together. But there's something about martial arts that's primal. I think it's there's a great quote, and I don't know who it's from, but they say that pain is the only real truth. And in martial arts, you know, you're constantly putting yourself through a painful experience or a very uncomfortable experience, right? As you know, right? Like, I think there's this sense of when you get a black belt, you realize that all that pain turns into progress. And it didn't break you down. You know, I remember as a kid growing up at House of Champions, there would be thousands of belts on the floor. And I would ask Sensei, I would be, you know, Sean Mark, I'd be like, Sensei, what are these? He's like, these are all the belts. These are all the people that gave up. And if you did make it to black belt, it was, you know, as tough as all these guys were, as much as they pushed you, as much as they were in your face, as much as they were making you do 1,000 pushups a day, you know, as much as they were tough on you, they didn't let you get you down. And because they, it, you know, you earned that respect, you know what I mean? It is that earning and that pushing and that, you don't just get a black belt right off the bat in any kind of martial art. You have to put in a certain amount of days and hours, you know, for like the art that you and I do, right? With American Tongsudo, it's 3 to 5 years for black belt. That's mandatory. You can't skip that. You can't buy it. You have to go through the training. You know what I mean? And let alone if you fail, right? You can fail a test. Like you might lose a game, but that doesn't mean like, right? You know what I mean? Like if you fail a test in martial arts, you are stuck at that belt until you can prove yourself. So I think there is a sense of reaching in martial arts that it keeps you humble. And I'm not shitting on other sports, because I'm a big football fan. I'm a big American football fan. And I would say, you know, like I said, I'm a Manchester United in the UK. I got to see some soccer games out there. There's something about martial arts where it's not just physically straining, but mentally, you know, it's that pushing, right? You're not just given something because you paid for it.
We could do this all day. Unfortunately, we're reaching the limits of our podcast length. If you could drink any whiskey with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be? What would it be? And where would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. Can I pick multiple, or does it have to be one?
No cheating allowed.
Yes, sir. Oh, boy. Oh, Lord, that's a hard one, Dan. Because there's so many. I would probably say Bruce Lee. I would love to sit with Bruce Lee, and I would probably drink a Suntory whiskey with him, a Japanese whiskey. I know he wasn't much of a drinker, but I think he would appreciate a traditional Asian whiskey such as that. But I would love to sit down with Bruce because, I mean, for a lot of reasons. One, I would love to have, I mean, his story alone was something fascinating because he revolutionized the world, right? I mean, for the most part, I mean, because of his martial arts, he even transcended the racial issues in the United States, right? Martial arts unified a country to an extent. You know, I think that's important. And I don't know if he realized how much of an impact his training had on the social life in the United States. And I would also have loved, you know, I mean, the amount of confidence that man had in everything he did, he never took no for an answer. So just to hear something like that, I would love to have heard.
Very good. Mr. Crosby, thank you very much for being
on the
podcast. Cheers.
Appreciate it, brother. Cheers. Thank you.
I love scotch. 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 Yep.
And don't forget to not just follow us on Twitter and Instagram at US of Dramerica, but also ask us questions and comment and say nice things.
And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if the mood takes you, you can leave us a review, as feedback is always welcome.
And drink whiskey. Slán tír.